Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
On this week's podcast, I'm chatting to Ondine Whittingham, Group Managing Director of Golin UK and Virgin Health. Ondine has worked for Virgo since 2006 and stayed with the firm when it was bought by Golin in 2014. She became UK MD of Golin Virgo in March 2020. Golin employs about 70 people in London and Virgo about 60. Golin is well known for its consumer work, but it also operates across the tech and healthcare verticals. Before we start, thanks so much to our PR Moment podcast sponsors, the PRCA. And if you haven't taken a look yet, all the categories of the PR Moment Awards 2021 are on the awards microsite, prmomentawards.com. Ondine, welcome to the PR Moment podcast.
Thanks, Ben. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, you started at Virgo, I think, in 2006, didn't you? Which is just a cool old story. And now 15 years later, you're MD of a 110-person agency. It's always one that people have got to decide in PR, and I guess any career, basically. Do you stick or do you twist in terms of your jobs? Yeah. You clearly stuck, and it's worked out, right?
Yeah, no, I know. It's a funny one, really. I think I definitely didn't expect when I entered my career in Virgo all those years ago that I'd still be here now. It's not what I had in mind necessarily, and I don't think it's necessarily, if someone sort of looked at my sort of character profile, would say that I'm someone that stays around or sticks in the same place long. I'm quite keen on change, but I do think it definitely depends on the organization that you're in and obviously the opportunity that it has for growth. And I feel like, actually, despite on paper it being one company, I've actually worked for three different companies and therefore had three very different experiences and obviously the development that comes with that. So, you know, initially Virgo as part of a sort of founder-led small boutique agency, then the experience of obviously taking and leading a business through an earnout and into a merger with a large group and network. And then finally, obviously, which also included actually a physical relocation to London. So actually, you know, there's a change of scenery in there as well. And then finally taking obviously the group MD role, which, you know, now I'm learning about a whole different sector and leading a far larger organization. So I think that, you know, that's kept it fresh, it's kept it new, it's kept meaning that I've been developing and growing and learning. But I do think if you do decide to put roots down somewhere for a while, I've been very mindful about how do you continually have that kind of external perspective and point of view. So made it kind of a mission of mine to always make sure I'm part of networks. I've always had really good mentors outside of the industry, outside of the agencies I've worked in, and made sure that I've kind of tried to keep my eyes firmly externally focused as much as internally. So I think that's important if you do decide to stay somewhere for a while. But yeah, undoubtedly, it's not been a bad path for me.
But it's interesting, on the one hand, you never planned to leave, but you didn't plan to stay, if you see what I mean. It was never in your subconscious, you didn't have either of those two things, but it kind of just, things kept happening and you kept getting new roles and the company kept changing and therefore you stayed.
Yeah, exactly that. I think I always had in mind, like, where I've always been a strong believer, you focus on your passions and what you feel you're good at, naturally, you know, you will find your path. And I think I've been very fortunate in that respect. And I feel like the role I'm in now is probably the role I was always meant to be in. And it's just been a very good journey to get there for me.
Okay. And when you, do you think people tend to change jobs too often in PR? I mean, it's different for different people, isn't it? But, you know, there's that 2-year cycle. I always think if you're going to make a difference to a company, you need to stay a little bit longer than that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think it's been quite, you know, well research documented that those entering the workforce increasingly, I think, sort of seem to be moving about quicker. And I think perhaps sometimes there's a bit of an unrealistic expectation about what a career in PR entails. And I have a funny feeling that actually the pandemic might exacerbate some of that in terms of, you know, graduates having to perhaps settle for jobs that they believe are sort of taking them one step closer to their goals, but actually their jobs perhaps outside of their fields of desire or purely maybe even on financial need. So I do think that's partly, you know, something that's become more apparent at that kind of more junior level over the last few years particularly. But I also think, you know, we're in an industry where our skill sets are quite transferable and fluid. And I think that means that you can move quite easily between agencies, between industries, between sectors. And so I think it's, as I said before, I think sometimes what, you know, it's about sort of looking and thinking and helping people, encourage them to see sort of longer term versus just sort of bouncing to the next attractive role based on a salary rise or a promotion. And I also think partly it's on us as agency leaders to make sure that our organisations are giving, you know, good career pathing and making people feel they can have an impact, and also thinking about how we facilitate sort of internal moves and lateral development as ways to retain people. And I think historically we're not as good at doing that as some of our sort of in-house teams, bigger organisations are. So it's definitely something I think we have to be better at if we're going to stop that kind of continual and perpetual sort of movement of people around our industry.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I think a lot of the more successful senior appointments, you know, just observing the sector over a few years, they tend to be internal appointments, it would seem to me. There's definitely not a hard and fast rule on that. I wouldn't want to suggest there is. But, you know, it's much less of a risk at any level, an internal appointment, isn't it? Because you know the person, absolutely. They know you.
So, yeah, absolutely.
It's a very good way to go. But obviously that does rely on the right person being there and I guess wanting the job. Look, it's interesting, isn't it? You were a healthcare communicator for, I don't know, the vast majority of the year of your career, I should say. And mate, you probably still think of yourself as a healthcare communicator. I don't know. Has it been a tricky move or evolution in your job, I suppose, to go from very vertical focus to having that, that group? I don't want to describe it as a group role because it's not. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Have you found that?
I think I sort of assumed it probably was going to be harder than I found it. And I think that's, you know, it's obviously been a baptism of fire into the job for many reasons. And it's been, you know, I've really enjoyed actually learning about new sectors and markets. And, you know, I'm fortunate I've got a brilliant leadership team who've really supported me with those learnings. And they bring the huge amount of wealth and expertise to help guide decision making for the business. But, you know, on the flip side, it is still PR. And actually, I think coming from a far more regulated environment of pharma into one that isn't so is probably easier than the other way around. So, you know, I think that's one thing which perhaps has made it a slightly easier transition. And I also think, you know, the sort of timing, as I say, you know, obviously the challenge actually probably was more around finding myself in the midst of a pandemic within 2 weeks of being in the role. And obviously, probably, you know, the markets and the sectors in some respect, you know, it almost was you know, we've seen that kind of transition and change where actually, whilst the experience and heritage of knowing those sectors is so important to give context, actually everything's becoming quite disrupted. So, you know, actually coming at this quite fresh is not necessarily a bad thing. And I also think, you know, what we've seen, that people's health and well-being has never been more front of mind. And I think that brands that perhaps never were even considering health are definitely sort of seeing that there needs to be an increasing focus there. So actually, you know, we've seen real opportunity in the merging of our specialisms, and a huge growth area for the business last year with our consumer health business, you know, really bringing together sort of the expertise and heritage of Virgo from a health point of view with the sort of creative powerhouse of Golin Consumer has made a really formidable combination. And I think, you know, we have good plans this year for sort of a similar thing within the health tech space. So I think health is becoming more pervasive across, you know, all of our lives for obvious reasons. So I like to think that with that background, there's quite a lot I can bring across as well.
Yeah, I guess that's, yeah, we've had a few people on the show recently who sort of took their jobs either in lockdown or just before, if you see what I mean. But yeah, I mean, how, just talk us through that. I mean, it's must be weird to get that, you know, presumably a job it's a great job, isn't it, that you got, and then 2 weeks in, it's like, you know, it's obviously still a great job, but it's changed, the brief has changed somewhat.
Definitely. I think it you know, it literally was 2 weeks in, and I think, you know, the expectation of what I thought I was going to be doing quite quickly shifted. And, you know, there's no doubt, like, I think from a PR point of view and a business point of view, obviously there were challenges in some of the sectors we worked in, and I think there was a period where things slowed a little bit. But overall, I think, you know, PR's fared fairly well, actually, throughout. And I think from a future perspective, I think, you know, the value and the role of PR has, I think, never been quite as valued as it is right now, actually. And I think it's all around us, really, in terms of, you know, how it's being used to create community, to create behavior change. And so I think the opportunity in that is vast. On the other side of it, I think that the biggest challenge I found was, obviously, you know, I had to build connections to team and build trust really fast in a virtual environment. And that was really difficult. Plus, obviously, I think, you know, balancing, and I think this is one of the biggest challenges we have right now, the pressure of agency life, the demands of clients and all of that against, obviously, us now juggling a very unusual home life in many ways, for many different reasons. And then that was pretty critical and challenging coming into that role without those kind of formed relationships and, as I say, trust of people. So I think that was the biggest challenge.
Yeah, and it's such a fluid, there was so much going on, right? I mean, it was yeah. The business was fluid, the client's needs were fluid, the relationship. Yeah. I mean, I guess you had a bit of an advantage because people knew you were in it, as we discussed a minute ago, you had an internal appointment, but there's a lot going on there. But yeah, I mean, it's true to say, isn't it? I think PR's had a pretty good lockdown. I mean, Q2 was pretty tough, I guess, with the exceptions if you worked in healthcare and corporate, but it went back quicker than I suspect most people thought it was going to, right?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think the last quarter of last year was, I think clients sort of suddenly started to feel reassured, but I think they sort of had a better handle on where they saw things going. And I think had a sort of more confidence to kind of start to move quicker again. And I think actually probably moved even quicker because there had been a period of down. So the end of last year was just, crazy busy, and it's not stopped. So we're still in it now. I think what would historically have been a few weeks planning and into it, it's just been straight in. So it doesn't feel like things are slowing down. And as I say, I think there is an increasing, value on what we do that perhaps wasn't there before. And, you know, being really honest, I think we know that kind of the amount of marketing spend going into paid has, reduced. And it does feel that this is kind of a period of, potentially, quite a strong period for PR as more money is coming in and being put on earned instead.
It's interesting to explore the reasons behind that, isn't it? Is that because the earned is more trusted and therefore people are prioritizing it more, or is it that their budgets are cutting back so that they're keeping things ticking over with earned, or what's going on behind that trend, do you think?
I think it's probably a combination of both, actually. I think there's definitely a piece around, we it was happening already, but I think it happened even more last year, of this really increasingly cynical consumer public audience, that brands were coming under more and more scrutiny. And I think they're just the kind of tried and tested method of selling your message and brand to an audience just it doesn't have the same effect that it used to. And I think the public want to hear from people they trust, they want to hear from experts, even more so during the pandemic. I think we saw that kind of shift to people moving away from even influences, sort of celebrities, through to actually, wanting to see doctors and more trusted experts as go-to for information. So I think, that's part of it. And the other part is, PR can be more cost effective. It can be far more agile, I think. And we can deliver it at speed, which is the other thing during the pandemic, when we had to pivot campaigns really quickly, you can do that in PR. And so I think that's what also the clients saw, that they could see perhaps a more agile, cost-effective solution as well.
Yeah, I mean, both those two things are fairly long-term, aren't they? They're not. That's not short-term. Okay, we're going to see a little spike. That is things. I don't know what changed forever. That's a big statement. But
I think so. And I think it's like now it's almost like we've got to step up to that. I think that's the opportunity in it.
Don't force it up.
Yeah, exactly. Let's not mess it up.
Okay. The just on the, because everyone's busy, right? I just want to explore that a little bit more, because are you busy dealing with internal stuff? Are you busy pitching for stuff that might happen? Are you busy just in healthcare and corporate, or what? Where are we all busy, or is it all of the above?
I think it is definitely all of the above, and obviously different people I think being busy with different parts of that. I think at the moment, I think the internal piece is taking up a probably it's not a disproportionate amount of time, because I think it's absolutely right and we have to be doing it, but it is disproportionate to perhaps what we were doing before. You know, I think Virgo and Golin have always kind of invested heavily in their people and their workplace and their cultures. That's been, I think, part of their kind of ethos and principles. And obviously over the years have launched some pretty sort of industry leading initiatives. But I think the focus on our internal teams and their well-being and their health has never been more important.
But what does that mean in because I mean, I get that that's, I think agencies have done a good job generally over the last 2-3 years in stepping up there, and they needed to probably.
Yeah.
What does that, you know, what everyone says, oh, we're really focusing on health and well-being, but that's you know, that's a statement. What is it? Because at the end of the day, we're all, you know, it's not the agency's fault, we're all sitting here working alone in a room on Zoom and that's tough, isn't it? And there's no fault there with anybody, any agency employers, but it's not ideal.
It's not ideal, and I think that's the point. It almost feels at the moment that as employees, the kind of shift in terms of our role has changed so dramatically. You know, we've always had to care for our teams, you know, and the best agencies have done that brilliantly. But the kind of the role of the employer just feels like you go from days just being a counsellor, like, you know, it really does feel like that. And I think the time and the kind of thought that has to go behind doing those things well is really time intensive. You know, if I think about at the moment, you know, the amount of time I spend probably joining calls, one-to-ones, you know, meetings I probably wouldn't necessarily have joined if we'd been in an office, just so that I can keep a connection to the team and, you know, a temperature check on the organization, because it's just so much harder in a virtual environment. And so you know the investment in that feels like it's literally like could be a full-time job right now, and I know my leadership team feel the same. So there's that aspect to it. And then I think the work, it's not slowing up, and that's not just the case in corporate and tech and health. You know, our consumer practice is really busy. You know, we've been fortunate, I think, that perhaps the sectors we work in haven't been as affected. You know, everyone's still eating chocolate, so you know, it's we've been fortunate in that respect, and clients I think are just keen to get things done now. So I think that kind of is trickling through. So the work's great, and there's a lot going on. And then new business, I think we saw the back end of the year definitely pick up again, and briefs are coming through. It really is, it doesn't feel a million miles from where we were pre-pandemic, but I think that the heightened bit is the team and the internal bit, and trying to balance that. I think that's the biggest challenge right now.
I mean, I guess with the obvious exceptions of things like travel and hospitality, businesses have adapted, haven't they? And you can't shut down. You can shut down for a month or two, but you can't shut down for a year, because you'll go bust. So you have to frankly get on with it. I think it's probably true for your business, my business, and your clients. You know,
definitely.
I just thinking about looking at your going back a bit. Healthcare was clearly a passion for you early on, and you wanted to be a doctor first up, didn't you? Which is I suspect not unusual within healthcare communicators. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that kind of had that in mind and then sort of deviated, and generally often for very similar reasons actually as well. So as far back as I can remember, you know when I was asked as a child what I wanted to be, it was a doctor. But, that was the plan. So, you know, did my GCSEs, A-levels, all of that with that in mind. But I did spend a bit of time sort of shadowing doctors in the NHS. And I think my realisation was that it's just an incredible lack of, you know, time and resource that they had, and actually to spend with patients, which, you know, sadly, I think we've all become acutely aware of during the last year. And I think the other thing was I dropped a lot of my creative subjects when I did A-level. So I really enjoyed sort of the creative side, so arts and English as well as the science. So I missed that aspect too. So I realised that I actually quite like the kind of fusing of those two bits together. So after leaving uni, doing a psychology degree, I actually was fortunate that I found a role in a press office of a breast cancer charity, where I was actually sort of cutting my teeth writing press releases about their scientific research for a lay audience, in a regional press generally. And so I really enjoyed that challenge of taking like really complex subject matter and making it accessible to the public. So it was one, again, I'm very lucky. I just found that niche really quickly and was like, that was that fusing of the two things that I really enjoyed. And yeah, I've been really, really fortunate since then to work on some amazing campaigns that I still feel have had a huge impact to improving patients and people's lives. So I don't feel like I've, you know, it's not a million miles. Obviously, I'm not a doctor and I'm not treating patients. I'm definitely not saving lives. But I like to think that, you know, I'm still having an impact in that way, which is great.
Yeah, and clearly at the moment, there's plenty going on in healthcare PR, right? So
definitely.
You're still working on it, I imagine, right?
I mean, it's still a passion. I love getting involved in terms of just even the planning side of it and the, you know, the seeing the sort of creativity that can come through in the healthcare space. So yeah, it's a passion of mine. It'll always be there. I don't think I wouldn't want to be involved.
Right. No, mergers in PR are always they're always interesting things to look back on, right? I mean, the mergers, the history of PR mergers is somewhat patchy. and the Golin Virgo, you know, let's not go into details of that, but it was a while back. But the, you know, depending on who you spoke to, it went well or it didn't go so well. But I suppose the point really is that you were there when that all happened. And looking back in hindsight, clearly, you know, you're now the MD of Golin in the UK, so that's gone well, and there's lots of clients that are still there, I think, from the merger that are still with the company now. So it's, you know, there's things that have gone well, but looking back in hindsight, are there lessons to be learned? Are there things that you think, yeah, we did that well, we didn't do that so well, how did it go?
I mean, as you said, I think there are always challenges when companies go through mergers, and I think overall there's probably a huge underestimation of the amount of time and investment that's needed to make them actually successful. You know, I can remember there was a report, I think, done by KPMG not that long ago that said 83%, I think, of acquisitions fail. And I can imagine that's even higher for marketing agencies, just because of the nature of kind of the businesses that we have and the focus on people and culture as part of that, which I think is one of the areas where there's the biggest learning. Because I think once a sale happens, I think, you know, and you're going through an earnout, obviously the focus is on the hard metrics and hitting the numbers. And I think one of the learnings probably is that whilst, you know, as both business, Golin and Virgo, very, very focused on their people, sometimes those softer measures of that are more related to culture and team, and particularly leadership succession, and actually the KPIs for leadership of how those things are going to be measured in terms of how successful a merger is, are really overlooked. So I think that integration piece doesn't happen until quite far into the end, or even sometimes, and I think probably was the case, quite far to the end. So the socialization of the two agencies and the merging needs to happen a lot earlier on than it sometimes does. And that requires quite a lot of investment, as I say, you know, either specialists, I think, with real experience doing that, because it's not easy, or a very dedicated HR function that has a lot of time to kind of focus on it. So I think that's one aspect to it. And actually, one of the things I was thinking back to and was sort of interesting, you know, when you go, oh, that wasn't expected, was how much the little things actually make a really big difference. So, and often they're process and system related things, like changing to a new IT network, a new timesheet system or a billing system, which on the face of it seem really mundane and, you know, not the things you're kind of necessarily thinking about. But the reality is they're really disruptive. And particularly when you're going from being in an independent agency where you have a sense of freedom, I guess, and that's part of your makeup, it actually can feel like the organization's changing and becoming much more bureaucratic. And so it's just, I think, being aware of those little things that can actually have a bigger impact on how people feel about an organization. So I think ensuring those changes happen really seamlessly and they don't put a huge additional time pressure on your teams and are not a huge lift for them actually can make a really big difference.
Yeah, I suppose the other bit, you know, there's lots of different perspectives, aren't there? So if you know, the seller's perspective is different from the buyer's perspective, which is different from the people's perspective, if you see what I mean. So we did a podcast with John Hughes not that long ago, and he was talking that the, you know, there's some mergers that have been really successful for Golin over the years, and I think if you ask people externally, they think, oh, maybe it wasn't that successful, but actually if you kept the people and you kept some clients, then from a financial perspective and from that those people's perspective, it's kind of worked. The brand's disappeared, but it's not always the same. How you see it externally is not always how you see it internally.
Definitely. And I think it also takes time. Like, you know, I think, you know, sometimes the value extraction of that merger actually doesn't happen till much further down the line, because you are bringing two organizations together, and you know, you're unpicking where those kind of points of integration can happen, where you can deliver more value for clients. And that often doesn't happen immediately. It does take time, to your point, of finding those synergies in the organizations, the right people to make them happen. So I think the expectation around, you know, this is going to happen in, you know, the first year of an earnout of coming to an end is sometimes quite unrealistic.
Yeah, and I suppose to spell that out, I suppose what you mean by that is you might have a client in a region, and then but it takes a little bit of time to take that client and win it in another region.
But
it can happen. But if it happens 3 years later, then it's a big deal, a big market, then away you go. Yeah. Things that need to happen quite quick, don't they? I mean, I know that point can take a while, but in terms of the people internally and how it's involved, I think I was chatting to Scott Wilson about it at Burson Cone and Wolf. You need to get on with it if you're going to, because it can start to drag if you're not careful.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And actually, you know, it's funny because I think the biggest shift and change came actually through the relocation up to Waterhouse Square. Obviously we were based down in Richmond, and you know, I think there was, you know, there were people that, you know, that was the home of Virgo, and were quite attached to it. But actually the physical change of being somewhere different, and you know, being closer to our colleagues in Golan, I think also shifted things quicker and the mindset quicker. So I do think a physical change does help. Actually, it makes you feel different about the business and the organization, and just being closer to people that you want people to work more with. It does help. I'm saying that now when we're all working virtually, but it does help. So I definitely agree. I think the quicker you can do things like that, the better.
Yeah, I'm always wary when there's a deal done and you say, oh, nothing's going to change for at least 12 months. Well, at that point, you've probably lost your opportunity to make the big changes you probably need to make.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and actually, you know, we're in an industry where we should be embracing change. And I think it's so interesting you say that, like that whole message around, well, nothing's going to change. It's like, well, it is. And it should, because that's the point of this, like, because we're creating opportunity for growth. And that, you know, for me, that's for me personally, I'm really a proof point of that. It's exactly that. So it is about change. That's the whole premise of it, really.
Well, I suppose that's an interesting point to take you back to personal level of yourself. Who knows, right? But the chances are, if Golan hadn't have bought Virgo, you may well have left, because you wouldn't have had space to grow.
So, 100%. I mean, I can't say for certain, but I would guarantee that would probably be the case.
You touched on it earlier, but just going back to issues around homeworking in PR, and listen, public relations and public relations agencies are not alone in this challenge, right? So let's, you know, I don't want to be seen to be PR bashing here. The similar issues are with everybody who is working from home at the moment. But just looking at it from a PR perspective, one of the issues is that within public relations, one of the training and learning in PR has always been tricky, should we say?
Yeah.
All that is, whether that's because it's difficult to have that knowledge transfer, or whether it's because PR firms haven't invested enough in training, that's probably a conversation for another day. But that learning by osmosis that has undoubtedly been the way that knowledge transfer and people have learned from a younger to a more senior career cycle, if you like, within public relations, has been really important. And it just doesn't work, does it, if we're all alone working?
No, I think I 100% agree. It's been the topic of many of our leadership conversations, you know, both in the near term, like now, and also what we do for the future. It is, I think, probably the top issue, if I'm honest. And I'm not sure right now we have a clear solution for how we can recreate that. But you know, I think we will be able to put in other methods that can compensate, but it will require a huge amount more investment of, you know, really hands-on leadership, really, really strong line management, and senior team that are far more invested in trying to recreate that learning experience through very continuous feedback if you're going to remain working in a virtual environment.
That the effort to feedback is almost, it's too much of a jump, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like you need the audio on the whole time. That's not the answer, but you know.
I know, but it was one of the ones we came up with. We all just sit on a Teams call with our audio on and cameras off, and so people can just have a dialogue as they work. It is that, isn't it? These are the things we're kind of all thinking about.
But then what happens when the delivery driver comes and the dog barks?
Exactly, it's quite distracting.
We've probably all just got to get over that, I suppose. You know what I mean? Because that there is a lack of spontaneity, isn't there? And that's probably the key.
It is. Yeah, the spontaneity. And the other, I think, probably after that being number one, I think the creative bit is the next thing that comes and has been, I think, a challenge. And, you know, I think it's not even just about, you know, I was chatting to our executive creative director yesterday, and he was saying, you know, it's not just about even process and getting in a room to brainstorm. It's just about being inspired by life. Like, you know, we're all sat in the same four walls every day interacting with the same people. And, you know, the natural inspiration that you get from everyday life is just missing. And that's really hard. So I think, yeah, there's that piece, that spontaneity of, you know, seeing something interesting on the tube or, you know, interacting with someone you haven't before and learning something new. It's just gone from our lives right now.
But I wonder, there probably needs to be there's a difference, but you need to get your spontaneity from somewhere else, don't you? Or your creative input from somewhere else, you know, whether it's endless watching of Netflix or I don't know. It's definitely not watching the news, I know that much.
We've talked about trying to maybe think about this year just getting more people in to do, again, it's all going to be virtual for the time being, but, you know, to do some more sessions, you know, people from outside the world of PR, from, you know, more creative industries, you know, to come and do talks with the team to kind of give some more inspiration when they can't get it from other methods.
But it just makes me think, you know, oddly enough, I started reading some of my wife's magazines the other week, like women's magazine, and that was outside my comfort zone and outside of stuff I normally read. It's kicked off a few ideas, so I don't know, maybe
there's definitely
stuff a bit like that, but it's never one thing, is it? And almost that, if you try and regiment it, maybe it doesn't quite work. It's tricky to do.
Well, we do have an initiative that's actually been in place for quite some time where everyone gets a well-being allowance within the organisation. So it's about £50 a month. And we had quite, not strict measures, but, you know, it's for health. And we've kind of really diversified what people are allowed to spend that money on. And one of them this year is, you know, looking at like sort of masterclasses and new learning opportunities. And there's some brilliant stuff out there at the moment. So I think the team have been taking full advantage of that. But yeah, to your point, it's like trying to learn something new or in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. When we spoke before, you said you were just a bit worried about a sinister underbelly of flexible working. Well, what did you mean by that?
So I think, you know, offering staff flexible working comes with 100% the best intention from all the organisations that do it. And we've clearly tried to do that even more during lockdown so people can balance their sort of work and life pressures. But I think what lockdown has exposed, and I think this is the thing, I think it was probably there already, but less acute, is that particularly, I think, when we're talking about parents working flexibly to accommodate, you know, the stuff that's going on, right, or like homeschooling, what we're seeing is, unfortunately, because the pressure of work isn't slowing down, actually, it just means that you're having to burn the candle at both ends. So as an employer, we're doing best we can. We're saying, you know, don't worry, take time out in your day to do homeschooling. We trust you to get your job done. But in reality, and I speak for myself here, that basically means you have to log on really early pre-kids get up, and stay working really late once they've gone to bed, and that's just not sustainable. So you know, I think, as I say, it's like we want to help people to balance their lives, but right now it's incredibly difficult to do so. And so we've actually started to think about whether there's more practical things that we can actually do to help parents, particularly you know, to help alleviate some of the life pressures and give time back. So as I mentioned, the well-being announced, one of the other areas we've kind of allowed people to be a bit more kind of open in their spending is actually looking at like things like having delivery meals or getting resources for kids and tutoring online, things like that that actually practically make a difference. Because I think right now flexible working it is a difficult one in terms of actually that, just to me, I think I can see for the team, means you're just working longer but just in a different time zone.
And it's, I mean, the kids, the schools are an important element to that, but it's not just about that, is it? even when the kids were at school for that short period of time, we were still, that there is not yet, I don't think there's not mature enough evolution, if you like, of what homeworking means for the majority of us. Because it's just, there's someone's diary, there's a gap there, I'll stick a Zoom call in. And that's just, and at the end of the day, you have to go and lie down. And you haven't done anything you need to do because you've just been talking all day.
And I agree. And I think that's part of, like, when we start to think about what the future looks like, it is a completely reconstructing that, isn't it? The day has to look actually quite different. Just filling your diary with Zoom calls is not the solution. So, and I'm not saying I know exactly what that is yet, but you're 100% right.
Maybe you need every afternoon there's no meetings. I mean, you know, is that realistic? Yeah. I don't know.
Well, we have started actually on a Friday. So, one of the things we did, we've introduced an initiative called Friday Forward, which means at 1 p.m. every Friday, we've kind of said no one can put meetings in and no one can do internal calls, etc., with a view to people at least having time to try and kind of, you know, close out the week, think ahead and give some headspace, you know, just to some of that other stuff. And then the last Friday of the month, actually, we close early now. And I'd like to think we might keep doing that. And that seems to be going down well. People have had to flex with clients and things like that. But overall, I think it's helped, definitely.
Right. Ondine Whittingham, Group Managing Director of Golin UK and Virgin Health. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
No, thank you for having me, Ben.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.